Welcome to Counterculture, the podcast, episode 4. I finally tracked down some people from Anonymous who are willing to talk, so today we find out whether Ron Paul is cool or uncool, why Anonymous didn't say fuck Facebook, and just what is a black fax. But before that, the world's greatest band, The Smalls.
I usually dust on my clothes like this. I'm usually more of a muted man. I usually don't lift my voice like this. I'm usually more of a muted man. I usually dust on my clothes like this. I'm usually more of a muted man. I usually don't pick a fight like this. But Christ has raised his head again. To be disclosed to you is ultimately secret. Involves the conversations of our freshly deposed leader. Speaking to his name, secure and extra on the guises. The treachery, the treasons of his previous advisors. Keep in mind, beloved, some of us they are a hatching. Would you best stop pretenders if the evil beast is watching?
Watching.
Hey. I usually don't strum my chords like this. Before I go, that's urgent. To anything you'd like to hear, ships of my insurgents. Your head is in the gun sights, now I leave a claiming office. The target held in place by crystal sets that break the novice. My prediction in the interest of your city as I'm weeping. A bleeder who does mimic, come to kill you as you're sleeping. Sleeping.
Which one works here? Let's go with blue.
Blue?
I will answer to that.
Perfect.
Just so you know, the peanut gallery consists of Rum and MacGuffin, in case I start yelling at them.
Yo, what's up?
No problem, yeah. Right on. So, welcome to Counterculture, the podcast. You're in Boston, you said?
Yep.
Have you been to the protests and can you describe them a bit for us?
I haven't been in the last week or so things might have changed a little bit since the last time I was there. But, I mean, the community at Dewey Square is really interesting. I've had a lot of great conversations there with people. It's some of the most fun I've had holding a sign and yelling at things.
Yeah. Were you involved in the Scientology protests?
Yep, that's how I got into Anonymous in the first place.
That's when you started?
Yep.
Many
fond memories of Beacon Street.
Occupy Boston, like some of the other places are going through like evictions and stuff right now. Eh? Occupy Boston is a little is one of the ones that's still hanging in there.
Yeah, that's because we're awesome.
That's it?
Pretty much. We did a lot of work early on to work with the police and with the city to try to make this as smooth as possible, so it's been a lot harder for them to justify being jerks to us.
It seems like there is, like there's going to be a hearing or something, right? On December 1st?
There was a thing today where we got the 10-day injunction where they can't kick us out during that time.
Restraining order?
Yep.
Yep. And at the end of that, they're going to have an actual hearing and sort things out, and hopefully they continue being on our side.
They're going to decide on that at that hearing whether we can stay or not?
They're going to decide whether they are going to be able to block the city from kicking us out, I believe, was the way that works.
I see.
So if the court takes the city side, that doesn't mean that the court is telling us to leave. It just means that they're giving permission to the city.
It's at the city's discretion then at that point.
Yeah.
Media and observers have criticized the fact that the movement isn't centralized in terms of demands and leadership and stuff. I think...
Well...
Go ahead.
The not centralized leadership thing kind of just makes me laugh, because that's all I've been doing as far as the activism stuff. Kind of used to this. Anything else would feel weird.
Yeah. I think... I think it's just a reflection of the pervasiveness of the negative aspects of society and government. Like, it's affecting everyone, right? So, in different ways, and people from different backgrounds and stuff. I think that more the reason than just people, you know, not knowing what's going on.
I guess you could look at it that way. Because I came in activism through this sort of weird angle through Anonymous and the internet. The idea of the traditional structure for activist organizations really rubs me the wrong way. I had a friend who was really heavily involved in the Canadians Against Proroguing Parliament thing.
Yeah.
And he was telling me this stuff about how, you know, some of the people who were running one of these things were trying to, like, you know, send orders down to all the different cities, and somebody was trying to copyright CAPP. And they were trying to use all this stuff to get themselves jobs in the government after the fact. And it really, really made me violently angry that they were doing that. So the idea of a traditional protest with a hierarchy and a structure and people who are in charge, and just, I won't do it. And I don't think a lot of people in our generation at this point will do it, because we're sick of that bullshit. We saw how that worked for the last 30 years. It doesn't.
And it's kind of developed sort of naturally, too, with people getting together online and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, it's just been, it's kind of naturally developed, as well as, like, for the reasons you're saying, that it doesn't work the other way, but it's also kind of a natural thing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think that a lot of the stuff that happened in the Arab Spring would have been able to happen if they had traditional leadership structures. And they were communicating through these sort of traditional ways of thinking, because round up and kill a lot faster. And
yeah,
you know,
they've been having a hard time. Like, the government has a hard time dealing with Anonymous and dealing with this movement because of that reason, right?
Yeah, it's that whole, you know, ideas are bulletproof thing. If a couple of people leave, even if they were in important positions, there's no reason for somebody else not to walk in the next day and start doing the exact same thing. You might have a little bit of delay while those people are figuring out what needs to be done. But the person who went away, either because they got arrested or they had family drama they had to go and deal with or whatever else, they're not what's important. What's important is that this thing is still happening and people still care.
Mm-hmm. So, do you, like, being on the street and talking to everybody and stuff, and do you see any like, what are the main problems, you would say, that's led to this situation?
The biggest problem to me is that we've gotten to a point where people feel like they don't have a way to participate meaningfully in their government anymore. And that's something that goes across party lines. I've talked with, you know, Republicans and Democrats and everybody in between at these protests. And that is a common thread that I've seen with everybody. You know, going out and voting is more of a symbolic gesture than anything else for people at this point, because we all know that, you know, you're in Massachusetts. Massachusetts always goes Democrat for the president, so it doesn't matter who you vote for. All of your districts for the Senate seats are gerrymandered to the point where it really doesn't matter what you do. And, you know, all the important votes happen behind closed doors, and you don't even get to hear about it until 2 weeks later when it starts to go into effect. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way a democracy is supposed to work, and we're just tired of it.
So, what do you see as the solutions? Have you heard any ideas from talking to people and stuff that make a lot of sense to you?
There are a lot of small scale, like, you know, individual win sort of things that I think would do a lot of good. I don't know.
Like little reforms and stuff to certain laws and stuff like that?
Yeah, the Glass-Steagall Act that they tried to put back into place and got knocked down because they're idiots and don't listen. You know, taxing the rich a little bit more than they are right now because they don't need to be coddled. Just getting pulled out of some of our crazy entanglements overseas. I'm not saying, you know, I want to go strict isolationist, but at the same time, we don't necessarily need to be spending 10 years in Afghanistan. That's kind of a long time.
It seems like, like, I think over the last couple presidents or whatever, taxes have gone down for the rich, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know. It seems that in the current, like, there'd have to be huge changes, right? In the current structure, it's hard for that.
It wouldn't actually be too hard if Congress had some fucking balls. Like,
but they, like,
there's no better way to put that. All you have to do is you have to have an estate tax that's actually worth bothering with. Start taxing capital gains, maybe actually do the tax on, you know, the Wall Street speculation, which people have suggested as one way to keep people from doing this day trading nonsense that's doing nothing to contribute to the economy and just sucking money out of it. Just tiny little things along the way, if you could get those passed in the space of a year, it's not going to immediately turn around the deficit and everything else, but it's going to just stop the bleeding. And we really need to do that right now, because the way we're doing right now, we're going to be paying nothing but interest in taxes with our tax money.
Mm-hmm.
Just in a generation, it's not sustainable at all. And it's not, we need to reduce our spending. We need to pay off this debt really badly. You can't sit on this much debt for this long.
I think in order to do stuff like that, especially when you say tax the rich,
mm-hmm.
it's hard for the government that runs their campaigns and stuff off of lobbyists and stuff to, like, if they tax the rich, they would get money out of the rich and put it into the country and stuff, or they don't tax them and the rich pay for their, you know, for them to be in office. So I think for the government, under the way it is now, it's a pretty easy decision for them, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I actually tried to do the math on this on my own, and, you know, being a girl from the internet, I'm very bad at math. That's just how things go. But if you just base it on the wealth available to a person, for 80% of Americans, you, in theory, have $1 that you could actually donate to a campaign that is not tied up in something like a house or a microwave or, you know, the things that are way more valuable to you than they would be as just liquid assets. For every $1 that somebody like that can donate,
mm-hmm.
Somebody in the top 1% has, it was like 430. Like, there is no reason to listen to poor people if you can actually have money count as political speech.
For sure, yeah.
And, you know, thanks to the whole Citizens United thing, it's where we are.
So what do you think will happen with the movement? Do you follow Adbusters at all?
I don't.
No?
Not even a little.
Because they put out, like,
they had a pretty poster that I saw once.
Yeah. They put out, like, tactical briefings and stuff for for Occupy Wall Street? Like, where should we go from here and things like that?
Oh, yeah, I think I saw them saying we should pack up our bags and go home, and I think that's funny.
Is that what they're saying now?
One of the things somebody put up an article about Adbusters saying everybody should declare victory and go home.
The last tactical briefing I read, which was, a day or two ago, it said, one, we should declare victory, go home, and come back in the spring, or two, stick it out in the winter.
I don't know if they got that one right.
I don't think this movement is something that you can ever declare victory for.
Yeah.
Once we've accomplished the things we're working on now, there are going to be more things that need fixing.
This is just the way the new democracy should work. Basically, ongoing.
A possible way for the new democracy to work. We're going to be figuring it out by the seat of our pants as we go along.
Yeah. But, you won't have to be in the street all the time, but people should just get together and have a say. Basically.
I think a really big thing with, specifically democracies as a form of government is every generation or so, the people really need to stand up and say, no, this is our government, and take it back from, these forces that will exist and actually span generations. When you have corporations that exist with a semi-personhood status, and you've got, generational wealth problems, and you've got all these structures that are designed to keep things sort of steamrolling in one direction, if people don't stand up periodically and go, hey, this is what the people actually want and need and are willing to, go to the mat for it, then you lose control. And I think that's happened here.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's gone past the point where we can't take it back.
I don't think that's even possible. I think the power gets more and more concentrated at the top. Mm-hmm. That the population is bigger and bigger. You know what I mean? The people that are struggling and stuff. I don't think it's possible for, if people just said, fuck it, we're just going to tear it down. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but I'd really rather it didn't come to the point where there's pitchforks and torches.
Oh, for sure, yeah. But I'm just saying, I don't think it could ever come to a point where, unless everybody is...
Right, I'm just saying, the natural flow of history from where we are right now gets fairly violent if we don't start being proactive about, restructuring things and getting everybody back close to the same page. It doesn't need to be, everybody gets an equal wage or anything. I'm not a socialist. I have some friends who are, and they're fine, whatever. But it needs to be an even playing field. So when you start off, the people who are the most capable and who put the most effort into it actually wind up being the ones who succeed, and not the people who knew this guy, whose families did this, 100 years ago. It can't be so skewed towards a small, tiny little minority doing well and everybody else getting fucked.
Yeah.
I just want to comment.
Go ahead.
As a socialist, not all of us are in favor of exactly equal income for everyone.
You're as a socialist, you said?
What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Capitalism seems like this is the natural progression of capitalism to me. It seems like.
Capitalism has a couple things going for it. It's one of the few structures that really rewards people for working as hard as they can for the most productive thing for society at that time. Because, if you try to manage things too much, then you wind up having way too many doctors because everybody tries to go for that. Or you've got people who are working as janitors who really ought to be, working in a science lab somewhere. So capitalism does have a good way of sort of self-selecting as long as it's a fairly even playing field and not the sort of thing where, you came from a white suburban family, so you're going to go into law school, and this guy who's actually smarter than you grew up in, Jamaica Plain, and he's going to work at a diner if he's lucky. That should not be the way it works.
It's tough to have an even playing field in a system that's based on competition, though.
Well, no, if it's based on competition, then it should absolutely be an even playing field, because otherwise you're not competing. you're just going through the motions and pretending to compete when really one guy already bribed the judge.
But naturally, like over the progression of capitalism, and this is what we've seen, I think, like if the playing field started even and then some people worked harder and got ahead or whatever, their descendants and their whoever they choose as their circle of people and stuff is going to then have a leg up, which is like the position we're in or we've grown into.
Well, are you familiar with what Bill Gates is doing with his money?
Bill Gates?
Yes.
No, fill me in.
Okay. Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and a whole bunch of other rich people have decided...
Yeah, I know Warren Buffett have given lots of money.
No, they've decided that this whole generational wealth thing is bullshit.
Specifically, are calling it dynastic wealth.
Dynastic wealth, I'm sorry. But the idea that, you know, wealth should stay in a family, you know, throughout the generations isn't actually helpful to society or capitalism as an idea or anybody else. It's not even good for the kids, because if you get these families where you just get handed all the money that you could imagine when you start off with, that's not really teaching kids anything. So they're actually trying to get other millionaires and billionaires to sign on to this pledge where they will, you know, on their death, donate 99% of their wealth to charity instead of leaving it to their families. You know, they'll give their families enough that they can, you know, be okay and get by, but all that huge, massive wealth...
1% is... Yeah, 1%, they'll definitely get by.
1% is still a good chunk.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But, you know, having the wealthy people actually recognize that dynastic wealth is not helping them, I think is...
Sorry to cut you off there. I think that Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, they're different money, though, than, like, the oil families and the, you know, like the old money or the guys that really influence politics and stuff.
We had a conversation earlier today about how new money is the best kind of money.
For sure, yeah. Like, for what you're saying, definitely. Like, Bill Gates is a creative guy, right? And he, you know, he's...
Well,
not really.
No, he stole most of his ideas. His creativity was in the business methods that he used to steal them. So there was some creativity there. It was just not on the software or computing front.
He's not a war or oil tycoon.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, along that same lines, you know, one of the things that happened today... watching TV, actually, while sitting here doing some work at the computers, I see this guy on TV that I recognize, and it's on CNN, and they are talking to a bunch of millionaires who are down there calling themselves the Patriotic Millionaires, and they are arguing to Congress, and they did in multiple sessions and hearings today, one of them public, so that's why the press was there, that they want to be taxed, that they want to pay their fair share, and that the laws need to change so they can pay their fair share. And I'm looking at the screen, and I realized one of the guys was a guy named Farhad. And he was actually one of our occupiers here from Boston, one of the, quite honestly, most useful guys that's been around for our media tent and really helping us get things done and just on the ground, like, every day helping.
Is a multimillionaire?
Happens to be. And he was standing there right next to all the others, you know, trying to help get this passed.
Wow.
And there he was on TV, and we're all looking at it like, well, that makes sense. Because he always walks around wearing a T-shirt that says, I am the 1%. And, you know, just seeing that and seeing that, you know, not only are there actually people out there in that 1% that are not only kind of on our side, but we've got some on the ground at our camps. You know what I mean? That's a big boost.
For sure, yeah.
I was very happy to see that.
Yeah, that's definitely a story that should get some publicity.
It was so funny, the first time I saw his shirt, I did not believe him, because he looks like a scruffy hippie.
Yeah, the first time I saw him, I wondered too. And then I started talking to him, I kind of got that impression. Like, no, he definitely seems like he has some money. And then the more I got to know him, the more I started like, yeah, he's definitely part of the 1%. Yeah,
but he's the good part.
Yeah, exactly. He's the part where I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's different for... Like I said, like for the oil companies and those guys and stuff, or the guys that have made their money largely tied to the government and having influence over the government is how they made their money. Pretty tough for those guys to say, yeah, we want to pay more taxes or whatever.
That's just right. One of the other things that needs to happen is all these, you know, oil subsidies are total nonsense and should have been gone decades ago.
It's just
I
like bailouts, right?
Not even just those. There are a lot of subsidies
That's the easiest
subsidies.
One, though, because the
corn subsidies.
The corn people are crazy.
Yeah, but
the
you know what? They're
people...
getting a lot of money, and there's no good reason for it.
For sure.
Whatsoever.
For sure, yeah. The corn people, too. The corn people are such, like, there's such huge corn farms that bought out all these other people and sometimes forced out other people by having patents on what corn they can grow and all that bullshit, right?
So let's not even start with that.
But anyway, yeah.
Seriously, if you get rid of corn subsidies, then you lose so many states in the presidential election that you can't even hope to make it.
Yeah.
And that's depressing.
All of the agricultural states immediately vote against you.
Yeah.
It's just how it works.
But oil, you can do something about.
Yeah, there's only a few states that care there.
Yeah, but oil companies pay for presidential campaigns, though.
They pay for any campaign they can get their greasy little fingers on.
That's what
on.
I mean. Yeah. It's really tough to go against oil.
They gave money to Scott Brown.
Yeah, no, they'll donate to they will basically donate to everyone. It doesn't even matter. They
Sides.
Will give money to whoever just to hedge their bets so they've already bought anyone who might get elected.
For sure, yeah, exactly. So that's tough to fight against. And then it's tough for whoever gets in to tax those guys, right?
Absolutely, because, you know, if you piss off the wrong people in Washington, then suddenly all those hookers that you were hiring actually start talking to the press instead of being nice like they do for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, why does it even matter who's banging hookers?
I don't know. I don't understand why Wiener stepped down. That was...
No, I can understand why it's a big deal when people who are big on family values and anti-prostitution get caught with, like, gay hookers. All right, fair enough. You're against gay people. You're against hooking. You're probably generally against sex. I can see why people make a big deal about it when you are doing it. But in general, yeah, why is that even an issue?
That always seems like the case. Yeah.
Could we all just run around in Puritan hats?
Maybe.
I've got a...
Yay, bucket hats!
You know the Puritan hats with the buckle was just
an
anachronism because they didn't have... buckles until relatively late, so it was like...
Buckles were seen as unnecessary frippery.
Yeah.
Frippery, I say!
Well,
anyway, back to the
matter
hand.
So, how did you... You said you got involved with Anonymous. Let's talk about Anonymous for a little bit.
Yeah, really good idea.
Sure.
LOL dongs.
With, through the Scientology protests?
Yep.
Is, like, did you... You already knew about Scientology, or like, how did that fall into place?
My roommate found the Message to Scientology video through Something Awful, and he showed me the Encyclopedia Dramatica page, and he was like, "This is the coolest thing ever. You have to watch this shit. It's amazing." And we watched the video, and. You know, we heard that there was some other stuff going on, that they were actually planning to do protests, and I was living out on the other end of the state at this point. And, you know, for people in New England, a two-hour drive is a really big deal.
This is the tiny state, man.
Obviously, people who don't live in tiny states don't feel that way, but... And there was one point where I was following some of the news that was going on, and eventually I just said, you know what? Fuck it. All this stuff about Scientology is actually, you know, speaking to me in this idea that the entire internet is coming together to do something about these bastards really just makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside. And, you know, the internet is rising up and I want to be there when that happens.
Yeah, that was a crazy time, eh?
It was great. And, you know, I actually went over to Gmail and I registered my anonymous email address. And then a couple hours later, my roommate comes home and he's like, so... I got my email address with Gmail. I got a bunch of flyers. I'm doing this thing. And it was the same day we came up with this. It was really funny.
Right on.
And we didn't make it to the first protest, but we made it to the second one in Boston.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was... Scientology is like, seems like they've kind of gone underground sort of since that time.
We hurt them a lot. Big time. They went from selling a couple hundred books a year to a dozen if they're lucky. And in the Boston area, obviously other cities like New York, they still manage to push a good number because they can get the tourists, or, you know, just we don't have enough anons to cover all the places where they might go.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing that I think came of this is the fact that really an entire generation of people now have been exposed to the idea that Scientology is a load of bullshit, and if you want to go believe that load of bullshit, that's fine, but maybe you don't want to spend your entire life savings and lose your family doing it.
Yeah, it's so crazy, man.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of money that you would have to spend to get to the end of the bridge is I think it was 360,000 at the bare minimum,
yeah.
But they, well, that's just for the courses and the materials. That's not counting all of the donations that they demand for the Ideal Orgs or for the IAS War Chest, or
it's only the mandatory stuff. It doesn't
everything
include
else.
The when they make you retake courses because they have a new version either.
Oh yeah, and they will absolutely make you retake a course if you like had a cold during one of them. It's the amount of money
you
extract these people. It's insane.
Crazy. I have no idea about how it all works, but 304,000 get to be like Tom Cruise.
360,000 at the bare minimum to get to OT8. To get to OT3, which is that Xenu story that you saw in South Park.
Yeah.
Bare minimum $120,000. Bare minimum.
Crazy.
And that's not even counting the money that you would have to spend to go down to visit Flag in Clearwater. And I think you have to go down there for the OT courses all
yes.
of them, right? So, I mean, that doesn't count all of your travel and your living expenses while you're down there. And if you're not in the Sea Org, you are paying for the hotel while you're down there.
Wow, it seems like, at least it seems like for people listening that you guys have actually, you know everything about Scientology.
Yeah, the stuff is like 3 years of my life protesting them. You don't go through that without absorbing a lot of it.
Well, that's good. That's good, yeah.
One of the best things that I got out of this was I was on a website for ex-Scientologists, and, you know, they'd welcome some anonymous people in there as long as they could be nice and behave. And this woman comes on and tells us that she got out of Scientology because there was anonymous protest outside of her org,
mm-hmm.
Their sort of church thing. And what the people inside the Scientology building were saying was so different from what she could actually see the protesters were doing that she went home and started doing her research, and she got out and she told her parents, and she was very worried that they might disconnect from her. They might decide that they can't communicate with her anymore because then they might be in trouble with the church.
Oh, they were Scientologists.
Her whole family was Scientologists. It was her mom and her dad and her sister. And she told her mom and dad, but she wasn't going to tell her sister right away because her sister was in the middle of one of those really expensive courses and she didn't want to make her sister take it over again.
Wow.
So she tells her parents, and she comes back and tells us, oh my god, my parents, like, they won't disconnect from me, they're so happy, my mom's actually going to read some of the things that I gave her, I'm so glad I did this. And then a couple weeks later, she tells us her sister's out of the course, and she's going to tell her. And then she comes back, and she's just, you can tell how emotional she is. She's like, guys, my sister's out.
And her parents?
She's going to be, her parents are out now too, but like, her sister actually wound up coming on the website a couple of weeks later, and we had this entire family leave the church and stay together as a family unit and be happy together, and, you know, sort of pull themselves out of that destructive pattern that they got themselves into just by standing outside their building. And I never got to hear a lot of those stories because a lot of times those people don't reach out to Anonymous after the fact. They just go on and live their lives, and that's what we want them to do. Or, you know, maybe they leave and they go join one of the independent Scientologist groups, like the Free Zoners, or the Marty Rathburn has his own group. And I don't care if they do that. I just want to make sure that if they want to leave, they can leave. And for a long time, that wasn't the case. And every year, especially with all the stuff that Anonymous has done, it gets easier for people who want to leave to be able to do so and not have any problems. And that's really all I wanted. I don't really care if the organization itself is destroyed. That wasn't my bag. I just wanted to make sure people could leave.
Yeah. Yeah, because before all that, it was like like when Anonymous did that, it was like it came out of nowhere. Like Scientology, like I heard about that once or twice or whatever, but until all that happened, it was like there was no nobody knew how bad it really was.
It was really funny. The first time I heard about Scientology, I was in middle school and I was taking German, and my teacher was telling us how in his country, because he grew up in Germany, they know that Scientology is this nasty cult and they keep an eye on it. And, you know, I'm sitting here, this little, you know-it-all 14-year-old shit saying, like, oh, you're just prejudiced. What's wrong with you? Your whole country is full of prejudiced people. And, you know, looking back on it after the fact, like, oh, no, he was actually right. But I know that if I had been approached by a Scientologist, if I had been, you know, if they tried to recruit me, I would have been very vulnerable to that. And, you know, there are all those people who are in that org who, any one of them could have been me if one thing had gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And especially after reading the story about Lisa McPherson, I don't know if you're familiar with this one, but she was a Scientologist, and she wound up dying in their care because they didn't let her go to the hospital and get psychiatric care. And that really, really hurt me to read, because I knew somebody who had a psychotic break like that, and some of the stories, or some of the diaries that the Scientologist kept of the way she was behaving were so similar to that person that I was crying while I was reading. I could not believe that somebody could deny help to somebody who was in that state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a very emotional thing. This was back in 95, though. There have been a couple of wrongful deaths since then, but it's not the sort of thing where if you join Scientology, you will die.
Yeah, yeah. What about, like we're talking about socialism and capitalism and reforms they should make or whatever. Did you ever look into the Zeitgeist movement? And what do you what do you think of their whole, like, are there any parts of that that you think are a direction that your country should head and stuff?
Personally, I know that my bullshit filter doesn't work very well. And so I can see their things and feel like, oh, well, maybe they have a point, and still not believe that they're right at all, because I know my bullshit filter doesn't work. And it feels like...
You mean you think you should know it's bullshit, but you don't?
I mean, it sounds like it might be right, but I know I've thought that about a lot of things that were bullshit, so maybe I should be more cautious. But no, I think there are a couple things that they have to say about the way the Fed works that definitely are, you know, things that people should hear and should know about. I don't necessarily think that ending the Fed is the correct response. I don't know that all the other things that they've got as sort of their core ideals are necessarily right. But they should definitely be able to get their voice out there and be heard and be treated with the same sort of dignity and respect as anybody else who's trying to push their nonsense.
I think there's some good ideas and a whole lot of bullshit, but I'm at least willing to let them, they should have a chance to participate, and if they get the chance, I'd like them to realize the bullshit parts were bullshit. And
which is what, if you don't mind.
They are very prone to engaging in conspiracy theories. There are a lot of things covered in the Zeitgeist movies that are either outright a conspiracy theory or very borderline such. Like, they're, you know, it's about 9/11, stuff like that.
They definitely also skate that anti-Semitism line really close.
Yes, they really do. And I think, you know, it'd be great if they could learn some critical thinking skills and realize that, you know, what they've been presented is a lot of stuff where there's some hard facts connected by a whole lot of tenuous stuff that maybe isn't supported by the evidence at all. And it would be really cool, like, they seem to be, aside from the fact they don't have the skills and knowledge to make that distinction, they seem like they're at least on the ball. They're thinking about the right issues. So, you know, they at least have some of the right ideas. I'm really glad for that. I just love to see them all develop their critical thinking skills a bit more and realize which parts are problematic.
Yeah, they're more of an example of a organization with kind of a, even though they don't say like we have one leader or whatever, it's kind of that kind of organization, right? So there's less.
Yeah, it's definitely sort of a top-down organization. They got basically all the same ideas from the guys that made the Zeitgeist movies.
Mm-hmm. I just ask because, like, for me, I grew up on a reserve, a native reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
I'm First Nations from Canada. And the lifestyle and stuff on a reserve, like, there's no taxes, and it's a lot different than, like, now I live in the city and I work and pay taxes and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
the two are totally different, and I'm obviously biased, but I really like I'm kind of a socialist too, but even more radical. Like, I don't know, I just capitalism seems like it's been tried for so long.
I as a socialist, I would say that it's important to realize the benefits that a market system has to offer in terms of developing a price mechanism. It's the economic calculation problem, if you're familiar with that, is very difficult to overcome. And central planning has a huge number of problems with it. There is a lot to be said in terms of using markets to determine prices.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that our entire society should be structured around markets.
Mm-hmm.
A very big difference there.
I read a really great article about, I think it was like the compassionate economy or something like that, and they were talking about how in, you know, the very early, like just barely post-revolution and a little bit pre-revolution economies, what in the United States, if they found out that a merchant was hoarding a specific thing, a specific product, to try to artificially inflate the prices.
Create scarcity.
To create scarcity, they would actually go, like, they'd get a mob together, and they'd go to that guy's house, and they'd take all his shit, and they'd go sell at market for fair prices, and they'd come back, and they'd leave the money on his table.
Wow.
And that kind of, the idea that everybody should be behaving not strictly in their own best interest, but in their best interest as a member of the community, I think has been gone for a long time, and that's something that I would love to see come back, but that's such a huge shift in ideology that I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime.
Well, Alexander Tocqueville, the same guy that wrote about how democracy could only last so long because eventually the people would realize they could just vote themselves money from the treasury. And he gets cited by a lot of right-wing libertarians a lot. But very interestingly, he wrote in his writings a number of cases where he talked about self-interest rightly understood, where people realize that while in the short term they profited more from certain behaviors at the expense of others, and if they realized in the long term their best interest is to work with other people, then you get very different patterns of behavior between those two cases. And what we see a lot of now is people working in their own interest at the expense of others, and not understanding that in the long term, their own self-interest is tied together with the self-interest of others.
Which is why we have the problems we have now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it may be in someone's best interest for, you know, them to be billionaires, but at some point, like,
all the people that are not getting ahead because of them are no longer going to be able to buy their products or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Or contribute to the base of knowledge and expansion of the economy that is what they are using their money to buy.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you have $1 billion. You can't buy a jet plane if no one has invented the jet plane. You need other people doing that. And you need that division of labor.
And if the pilots are on strike and...
Right.
Yeah.
A really good example of that is sort of the Walmart problem. Because what's best for the people in Arizona is for them to make lots and lots of money and pay their employees as little as possible. But what's happening is they've driven down the market value of an hour of work, to the point where these people are employed full-time with Walmart, but they still need to apply for food stamps because they aren't making enough money to survive. And that's actually draining the resources that, you know, the people who are running Walmart would really like to have available to them. So you can't just keep taking from the system to the point where, you know, there's nothing left for anyone else to have, because then, you know, they wind up just taking it from you in the end anyway.
Mm-hmm. The ultimate resolution of that problem involves torches and pitchforks again.
I think we mentioned that.
Yeah, so, you know, no one wants to see that one happen, except, you know, the people who are so desperate they want to.
Definitely the 1% doesn't want to see that happen.
Exactly.
Definitely, and it is in their best interest to figure out this shit right now and get things sorted out, because if the people from the 1% actually sat down and went, look, guys, we can't keep going this way. We are going to eat ourselves alive. Let's figure something out. And they actually worked it so that some of that, you know, distribution of wealth evened out just a little bit, just a tiny bit. Just getting it back to, like, the 1950s would be beautiful. Seriously, 1990s I would be happy with. It wouldn't be great, but it'd be a start at least, and it would be livable, and people wouldn't be sitting here going, well, I can either pay for heat or food or rent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even get 2 out of 3, I get 1 out of 3. Well, I guess it's time to go see what I can do outside of the law, because I don't have any other options. You don't want people having that mental calculation. I was actually at Dewey Square, and it was the day after the arrest happened. I could not be there, but I was sitting there doing this mental arithmetic, and I realized that there is no reason for me not to get arrested for this. There's no reason at all. I'm my own employer. Anybody who's going to look at my criminal record in the future is going, you know, for employment, is going to be much more interested in the fact that, you know, oh, well, I didn't graduate college and I've only been self-employed. I don't even have any references that you can call because all those businesses went under. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to care about that a lot more than one political arrest. Oh, no. And there is, you don't want a population full of people who can do that mental arithmetic to say, I could behave and follow the rules and get by, or I could do something else and risk it, and the thing that I'm risking actually doesn't matter at all to me because there's no actual negative repercussion because I'm already
it's not going to make my situation worse.
Exactly. You don't want the entire population going, huh, well, I guess violent revolution actually works in my best interest.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't end well.
It's bad all around. Look at the French Revolution.
That
does
end
not
well for
end well.
Anyone.
For sure, yeah. Getting back to Anonymous a little bit. No, that's okay. Right now there seems to be a little bit of, like, I follow a lot of Anons on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And right now there seems a little bit of infighting.
It's
or
funny,
is that, or is that
the
just
the natural state?
Always.
Is that what it is?
I will speak to that very clearly, that anywhere between 6 to 8 months, Anonymous utterly destroys Anonymous. Anonymous becomes its own target, and tons of people get attacked by their Anons. And it is such an amazing event to behold, and there's always build up to it when it starts to happen, where the infighting starts to slowly build and the public can see it, and you'll see just outright attacks, people getting doxed, servers going down. And you know what it does? It does one very good thing. It clears away a lot of people who can't stand the heat, and it also gets rid of a lot of people whose egos are starting to get a bit out of check, which will happen Anonymous after you've done a lot and people start looking to you for things.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got, you know, you're in control of a Twitter that has 500,000 followers, you know. Destroying those people seems to be very useful for Anonymous. It seems to be sort of like, you know, clearing the brush with fire, you know. It's an amazingly helpful thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened many times too. I could start listing them off, and it's fun to watch every time.
Reminds me of what Thomas Jefferson said when he heard about I think it was the Whiskey Rebellion shortly after the American Revolution. He was like, "God help us, but that we should have a rebellion like that every 50 years." Like, you know, people, a lot of people there are very insightful about how, like, the reality of social systems say, you know, well, they have a tendency to build up structures that aren't in the best interest of most people, so you got to clear them out periodically.
And because of the structure or lack of structure or whatever, it works out anyway.
I mean, people leave all the time. The fact that I've even been doing this shit for almost four years now amazes me. I expected to be gone within a year. I did not expect this at all. There are a lot of people who will come and go. There are people who will get pissed off at the drama and run away for 6 months and come back under a different nick half the time. And then go right back to what they were doing before.
Oh, no. They won't come back humbled? That's what I thought might be a byproduct of that.
Okay, I don't know if you know that many Anons, but humble is not something we fucking do.
We're very bad at it.
I believe the most often used phrases is obnoxious motherfuckers.
Oh, yeah?
Well, we only get away with the shit that we do because we are completely audacious about it. We do not care. You could tell me that there is no way that we're going to change the government, and I don't actually give a shit what you say. I'm going to go do it because Anonymous delivers. That's what we do. I don't care what it is. We said we're going to do it. We're going to go do it. Are we going to go hack Sarah Palin's email? Fine. Let's go do that. That guy did that. Okay. We won. The way that Anonymous works, very specifically, if you're not one of the, you know, maybe a dozen people at any given time who's actually a gifted hacker or something, It's nothing but actually believing that this is possible and then acting out on that belief and doing it. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And when it doesn't, everybody laughs at you and you move on and you pretend that didn't happen. And that wasn't Anonymous. That was just you being a dumbass. And it really,
we take, and half the time it's you being a dumbass, and then if it works, it was Anonymous.
That's really an idea.
Like, Anonymous gets all of the credit and none of the risk. And it's really fun to participate in that sort of thing, though, because you get to act out this completely different, you know, idea of yourself. While you're in those shoes, you're sort of, you know, putting on the elephant head and you're being Anonymous, and, you know, if you did it wrong, then everybody's gonna say, oh, well, that wasn't Anonymous, that was just some idiot wearing an elephant head, nobody cares.
Yeah.
So do you think that's the big draw?
One of the things that happens, especially when a big thing comes out, like the Chainology thing, or like when people are helping out with the Arab Spring, or, you know, any of those are major actions that Anonymous has done lately, is the press tries to define what Anonymous is, and then all the new people who show up try to define what Anonymous is, and it's funny because you can't actually define what Anonymous is because it's not a thing and all that. But
Anonymous is anyone that uses the name.
It's true. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I came up with when I was going through my phase of that, because everybody does it, was that Anonymous isn't a group or a person or an idea. Anonymous is the thing that happens when you stop being afraid of the consequences. And sometimes it's something really cool, like, you know, let's go fucking knock over some dictators in the Middle East. Let's do this shit. Or, you know, let's go deal with Scientology. They're a bunch of jerks. Or sometimes it's really terrible. Like, let's go give a bunch of kids with epilepsy some seizures. And
that's not funny.
I just painted that one, but, you know, It goes both ways, and it goes really strongly in both ways, and it's just because people are acting without that fear of repercussions.
Mm-hmm. It's not that Anonymous is amoral so much as we're ethically diverse.
I suppose that's one way of phrasing it.
So I usually post who's going to be my next person I interview, or next group, or whatever, and people write in questions. So I'll ask you some of the user questions.
All right. Let's do this.
First is from this guy. I got this guy George from work, so I'm gonna say his name so he when he listens, because he had no idea. He saw my notebook and he was like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm a writer. And he's like, oh, what are you writing about? I said, oh, I'm actually writing some questions. I'm going to interview some guys from Anonymous. And then he just lit up. He's like, oh, Anonymous, ask him this and tell him they got lots of support and everything and whatever. So he was real excited, so I got to say his name. And he asked, what does Anonymous think of Ron Paul? Has there been any mention of him on Anonymous forums and stuff?
Oh, God. Okay. Do you mind if I take this?
Go for it.
All right. Even back in 2008 and earlier, there were a lot of Anons, especially on 4chan, who were all about fucking Ron Paul all the time. They would suck his dick all day long.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're a majority, but they're very loud, as all Ron Paul supporters are. I will say this on a personal level. I don't necessarily think that he's cut out for the job of president, but he's the only one of the current Republican nominees that I think I would trust actually picking out a Supreme Court justice.
What?
No, it's true.
Huntsman?
Maybe Huntsman.
I would go with Huntsman, personally, on that one.
But Ron Paul, you know, he does have a couple of his priorities in the right place, and I do respect the fact that he's willing to express really controversial opinions.
Mm.
That doesn't make him not a racist asshole, but that's okay. That's separate.
I do think that it's very interesting. Anonymous is it's a group that is primarily on the internet, and so the sort of demographics that you tend to see on the internet are overrepresented in Anonymous as compared to the general population. As a result, much like on the internet as a whole, you see a lot more Ron Paul supporters than you would anywhere else in your day-to-day life, except maybe at like
a Ron Paul rally.
A Ron Paul rally or the Competitive Enterprise Institute. But
or inside Ron Paul's brain.
Anyway, regardless, it does mean that demographic is there and present a lot more than it is other places. And I think that there are other demographics as well that are overrepresented compared to the general population. And there are demographics that are a lot more vocal compared to how they are in the population as a whole. And so you got a lot of discussions going on that maybe in some respects favor him and in some respects don't. But a lot of discussions between groups that otherwise wouldn't have a whole lot of interaction that as a result of the specific demographics of these groups have these discussions. And, you know, sometimes it's, Ron Paul is really good on this issue, or, wow, Ron Paul is a huge dickhole and no one should ever listen to him because look at this, look at what he just said. Seriously.
I would still love to see a debate between Ron Paul and Obama. I would love that debate.
I think that would be a good start, but I would rather see one between, like, Ron Paul, Obama, and someone else with some sane positions on something that neither of them is particularly sane about.
When Ron Paul was on TV, the last debate, people were saying, like, Ron Paul got, like, 90 seconds out of the hour debate or something like that.
They totally shut him
out.
Yeah,
they do. They always do.
They don't believe he's a credible candidate, so they don't treat him like a credible candidate, so nobody thinks he's a credible candidate.
Well, he's been running for 20 years, and he's never been a credible candidate.
Yeah, he does kind of have the stink of failure on him.
Yeah, he definitely has the stink of failure and huge qualities
on
him.
So, I guess another question.
He's slightly less than Lyndon LaRouche.
Another question, about Ron Paul. I'm not from the state, so I don't vote, and I don't follow the candidates or whatever, but I think it's pretty obvious, it's the same thing here, like the regular two-party system, whatever, is almost pretty much business as usual, no matter who you elect. So would it be business as usual if Ron Paul was elected, do you think?
No, but he's not really a Republican. He's a Libertarian that runs under the Republican ticket.
Actually, I disagree with that.
Really?
Ron Paul is a self-described constitutionalist. In point of fact, he's not really a constitutionalist. In fact, he said some things that are very clearly indicate that he is not very familiar with the Constitution, like the fact that he once stated that the Constitution is replete with founders referencing God,
mm-hmm.
which I should note, happened exactly zero times in the Constitution, aside from when they named the year and used AD as the naming convention. But regardless, he thinks of himself as a constitutionalist. He's very much pro-states' rights. That is not libertarian at all. The libertarians are anti-government. I mean, there are several different libertarian camps. I'm pretty familiar with the movement, so, you know, I don't want to misrepresent them. They do have the minarchists, the people who believe in a minimal government to prevent against force and fraud, But other than that, they basically want everything decided by the free market, and most of the other groups of libertarians are more free market than that and don't think that the government needs to do much, if anything.
You know Doug Stanhope?
Yeah, I'm familiar.
He's a libertarian, eh?
Yeah.
He's funny.
But, I mean, they have a variety of stances, but fundamentally they are opposed to government intervention. He is not at all. He is opposed to the federal government superseding the states, which is something that in some respects I agree with him on, even though I don't agree with him on most of the respects that he brings it up on.
See, the problem is, like, every time it comes down to states' rights versus federal rights, it's some shit like gay marriage or slavery. Like, it's never over something where you actually think the states should have a right to be dickholes.
Well, I mean, you know what, to some degree...
Legalize marijuana and stuff, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
but we're in Massachusetts, so, you know, we've got, like, this tiny little sliver of a, well, if it's this tiny amount, then you're okay.
Oh, yeah.
Most Massachusetts wants it legalized, according to surveys.
Well, no, it's just legally right now.
Yeah, that's the current legal status.
Half of an ounce or something?
1 ounce.
1 ounce.
It's confiscation and a $100 fine.
I don't smoke pot.
Doesn't make much difference to me, but I'm familiar with it. But, no, I mean, there are the libertarians that, you know, want less government, and there are the libertarians that want no government. Fundamentally, libertarians are anti-government. Ron Paul is not anti-government. He has some...
He's anti-federal government.
He's anti-federal government, but he's pro-state government. He's very much pro-state government. And in fact, a number of libertarians that I know strongly disagree with Ron Paul because of that, but they would support him over most other Republican candidates who are more pro-government than he is. Mm-hmm. So,
and he is state government, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of hard to be...
He's not even anti-pro-government, pro-federal government all the time. From 1996 to 2005 or so, he went on extensively about how he supported the Defense of Marriage Act, which
really?
Yeah, and then
I didn't know about that.
Yep, and then not only that, but then he co-sponsored a bill that would remove jurisdiction from the federal courts for challenges of the Defense of Marriage Act, very specifically. So according to Ron Paul, it is, you know, unacceptable for the federal government to tell states that they have to accept gay marriages in another state, but it's a-okay for them to tell them they have to accept marriages between first cousins. And not only is that okay, but the courts shouldn't even be able to make decisions against that. And due to the wording of the Defense of Marriage Act, it would actually be impossible to challenge in state courts. So he very explicitly was pro-federal government in that one case. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not that he is entirely consistent on that, but for the most part, he is pro-state government as opposed to pro-federal government, and therefore, most libertarians would agree with him more than other Republicans. So, I don't think it's fair to say that he is a Republican, and, I mean, obviously, he runs as a Republican all the time, except for 1988, but in general, while he does tend to side with Republicans, he is more libertarian than Republican, but he's not really a member of either of those two factions, per se.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing? Like,
well,
I don't know. I'm just sick of his supporters. Like, seriously,
yeah, his supporters are annoying as
shit.
They
start talking, I just
think
it's really fun making cow noises at the moment.
No,
bless their little heart.
I think that overall, it is a good thing that he doesn't fall squarely into either camp, in the sense that it does promote a diversity of discussion in some respects. In the specific case of Ron Paul, it is problematic. He is a supporter of Austrian economics, which is the far right-wing ideology that most libertarians adopt, and is adopted by essentially all anarcho-capitalists who are the extreme right-wing.
Mm-hmm.
And Austrian economics is, frankly, batshit insane. There is no nice way to phrase it. It is insane.
One of the guys on Why We Protest has been trying to argue with me that Austrian economics is totally the way to go. So
it's
pretty funny.
It doesn't matter if they get some details right. They are fundamentally not really much different from solipsists. They basically they fundamentally reject evidence. This is written by the founders of Austrian economics. They reject evidence in determining whether their ideas are right or wrong. You cannot prove them wrong because they don't accept that proof works against them. Evidence in favor of it works. Evidence against it doesn't count. So I call that personally batshit insane. I don't know of any standard by which that's defensible. But in spite of those personal disagreements with that methodology, I think that overall the fact that Ron Paul does not exist strictly as a Republican or strictly as a libertarian is a positive thing because it gets people out of the mindset of
there's only two ways to go.
Not even two points of view, but the fact that there should be leaders telling you what to think and that you should follow them without thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you know, screw this whole party concept. That doesn't work. All you end up doing is blindly following, you know, people who still have no idea what they're talking about in most subjects. So the more parties you have, the less concentrated the perspective that you're getting on your informing your ideas, and the better that is. If you understand more points of view, you will generally come to better decisions than if you understand fewer points of view.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically my policy on the matter.
Do you think, here's another user question, do you think Occupy Wall Street has been a co-opted movement to combat the co-opted Tea Party in an attempt to create two false oppositions?
No. I mean, I'm down there a lot.
There have been a lot of people attempting to co-opt Wall Street.
You know, there are a lot of people down there who are participating actively, who are maybe very strongly inclined towards some other group. I've talked to people who are, you know, very strong Ron Paul supporters there. I've talked to, you know, various people who wave Libertarian Party flags. Okay, I usually see Ron Paul flags, but I've talked to a lot of libertarians there, and they're usually very set on their ideas. I've talked to a few Democrats who are very set on, maybe the Democrats suck, but they're better than the Republicans, so we should support them.
There was somebody there trying to get signatures for Obama, and I just laughed in his fucking face.
Oh, there are definitely people there who are constantly trying to co-opt it, and there are certainly people there who are actively participating, even in the ways that I want to see people participating, who do have very much a very strong ideological bent towards certain ideas. That it would be impossible to dispute that exists. However, as we like to say, this is the, you know, we are the 99%. You don't have the 99% represented unless you have those people giving their input too. They are part of the 99%.
Yeah, yeah.
The 99%, we say that, but we really want to represent the 100%. Fundamentally. And, you know,
I disagree with that.
Really?
I do, because, you know, I think the people in the 1% can stand with us, but they can't be us.
No, I think that ultimately what we want is something that is best for everyone, and that does include the 1%. We aren't just trying to make them the new other 1%.
But they would no longer, for it to be something that worked for everybody, there would be no 1%.
There probably would, frankly. I mean, there's always a 1%.
There's always going to be people who have more money or more resources or whatever, and there's always going to be people who are stuck in the gutter. It is going to happen no matter what. It just shouldn't be 80% of people in the fucking gutter.
No, even if absolutely 100% equal income, equal political input, whatever, if we did all of that, if we had, like, a strict anarcho-communism, if we went that far...
I don't want to go that far.
No, even if we did, it wouldn't matter. There would still be a 1%. The 1% would be whoever was the most popular, who was able to get their voice heard more than others. They would still have more representation because of their ability to convince others than 99% of the people. It is just... It doesn't matter. It is impossible fundamentally to make everyone absolutely equal in every way, and if we did, life would be awfully boring and probably no one would want to live it. It would suck, frankly. No one realistically is trying to achieve that. Even the people who think they're trying to achieve something very close to that don't really want everything equal. They want people to have the best ideas to, you know, be able to promote those ideas over other ideas. Those people still would have more influence. There would still be a 1%, because there are always some people who have more influence than others. That is just how it works. The only goal is trying to change the nature of what that influence is and how much of it they have.
Okay, the next guy asks, do you guys know who the Jester is? I have no idea what this question is.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, we know who the Jester is.
We know the fucking Jester. Let's do this.
Okay, all this guy said was, what's the dilly with Anons and the Jester? That's his question.
The Jester's a dickhole. That's what the deal is. He is a no-talent dipshit who thinks he's a big guy because he knows how to DDoS things and takes down jihadist websites for 30 minutes. He's useless.
So, you know, he's a hacker?
I will say that much more eloquently, since people around here don't seem to want to actually hold an argument that anyone would want to listen to. The actual story there is quite simple. This man is delusional in thinking that he is helping with anything he is doing. And I will explain that quite easily. When you find a jihadist website or a terrorist website or anything similar to it that you really want the world not to be able to access, do you A, just say, well, that sucks, and move on about your day, or B, send it out to all of your Twitter followers and all of the news and Anons who are following your Twitter, and then only hold it offline for half an hour because you aren't actually talented enough to do anything stronger than that? He chooses to do the latter, which of course just means half an hour later when the site is up, it's got thousands of new users reading it. I mean, if you were a jihadist and you wanted to find the latest and greatest sites, the best thing you could possibly do is just follow the Jester and learn how to become a terrorist, because he shows you where to go learn. It's horrible. I mean, the guy's a complete moron, and he's deluded if he thinks anything he's doing is actually helping. He is hurting every cause he thinks he's helping, and it's done nothing but annoy people on our side of the fence. And, you know, it's just gotten to the point where it's pretty much a him versus them kind of a thing.
Is that right?
It's also worse because there are, I heard recently about a group of pro-jihadist hackers who are doing very similar sorts of things. I mean, they're actually more talented. They take down websites by hacking the server. So they're actually better than he is, which is kind of sad. But the point remains that they're fundamentally doing basically the same sort of thing. He is no different from them. Okay, maybe he has, like, a better idea about what direction things should go.
I will say that I would prefer if, you know, people were going to, you know, fight between the jihadists and the anti-jihadists, if they do it by, you know, DDoSing websites instead of blowing up shit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's way better. But, I mean, fundamentally, both groups are idiots in this case. So, you know what? They can do whatever. Both cases, they're at most not achieving anything, and quite probably hurting their own cause. And in his particular case, he's just hurting his own cause.
Okay. So the next guy asked about Facebook, because I had heard Operation Facebook or something like that was on again, off again kind of things?
No, it was never an on again kind of thing. This is exactly what happened, because not only was I in op Facebook as the third person to join that channel on IRC, sitting there, and talked to the guy who put up the post. What actually happened was, you know, something that happens in Anonymous. Someone puts up an idea, you know, and since anyone can be anonymous, you know, he says he's anonymous, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a press release. Now, the media at this point will literally print, if I put out a press release saying that I just went to the bathroom and I describe what I did in detail and the contents, but I said it was anonymous, the New York Times would print it. That's where we are in the world today, because it's anonymous, right? So this guy, he says Anonymous is going to attack Facebook when no one in Anonymous wants to or cares. And so he sets up an IRC channel and puts out a press release, which is what you do, right? And people start joining the channel, laughing at him, yelling at him, calling him a moron, and leaving the channel. The channel ends up getting banned from most of the IRC servers he tries to run it on, and he sort of gives up. as the week goes on, every single day, news sources are picking up on this as the next sensational thing, because that's all they care about is page views,
yeah,
not whether it's true or not. And they start printing it, and, you know, soon it becomes self-fulfilling what they're printing, even though it's not real. And the guy that started it has long since given up, and he's gone, and no one cares. And none of the anons who have really done anything to note, you know, to date, are into this. Long since all that's over, because the press was reporting about it, all these people who weren't in any way really involved with Anon, or possibly were very ancillarily involved but weren't around during those weeks, decided, oh, we must actually be doing this. The problem was, all the people with any real skill or real talent or control of any of the infrastructure, you might say, such as the Twitter accounts or the IRC servers or the websites, were all against it and thought it was dumb.
Yeah, I was reading that.
Anonymous never actually mobilized against Facebook because it was, A, a mistake in the first place, and the B, turned into kind of this weird self-trolling idea where the news were just doing it because they want to be sensational, and Anonymous had long since written it off as a dumb idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hell, half the trip we do involves using Facebook to communicate with each other. Why, as much as Facebook sucks, why would we take it down?
Yeah, there are good reasons to be mad at Facebook,
sure,
for some of the things that they did to some of the activists, but...
No, absolutely, but at the same time, you know, if you're trying to accomplish stuff, you bring it up to... You have to use the channels that are available to get out to people. And everyone, not everyone, but practically
everyone
uses Facebook. If you took down Facebook, you would lose your means of getting word out to, like, 50 to 80% of the people involved. That would be dumb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, social media is a big... Obviously, for Anonymous, yeah, especially. Yeah.
It's hard to overstate.
Facebook specifically is good because it's a way for people who aren't necessarily in the traditional Anonymous channels, who maybe don't know how to do IRC or some of the other things, to actually get involved, because some of their friends might be Anons and will actually post the event on their Facebook because they don't care, and then other people can see it and join in.
Yeah, like, you know, most of the, a huge number of the people that are actually active on Facebook at all have, like, hundreds of friends, most of whom they barely know if they've ever met at all, that they got, you know, random friend requests
just like,
that they accept.
It's just like Twitter followers.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't know how to use the internet at all, odds are pretty good you still know how to use Facebook.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyone that has internet access anywhere is probably on Facebook, and they will have pretty decent odds of hearing about these sorts of things, even if they have no real, you know, internet savviness. So you're losing your, yeah, the traditional media isn't going to sit around covering everything Anonymous does.
Well,
obvious reasons.
Well, they do a lot.
No, they do a lot. Sometimes over very strange things, but they're not going to cover they're not going to cover the things we want to put out there, and they're not going to do it in the way we want it to be put out.
Anything that's big, that's sensational, they'll cover, like the Mexican drug cartel,
right,
thing and stuff.
Let's not talk about that at all.
Oh, yeah. No.
Let's not even start.
But no, realistically, until it gets big, or, you know, something sufficiently sensational that it attracts their attention, it's very difficult to get people to hear about it. And even if they hear about it from that, it's very difficult for them to find out an accurate source of information. So if you really want to get things out, you have very limited options, and you want to get things to where people are going to see them.
Social media.
Where they'll actually read them, and where it's a source of information that they will perceive in a broadly positive manner. There's a lot of studies about how people take in information. You do need to get information to people from a reasonably positive source, usually. And Facebook is amazing at that, because everyone is on it. People that know nothing about the internet still read it and will still see a lot of this. If you want to get your message out, it is probably the single best way out there right now in the world to do so. And so whether or not Facebook has terrible policies, and they absolutely do, taking down Facebook would be absolutely counterproductive of getting message out on so many other issues that it's simply at present not a net positive.
Okay. Last user question. Why don't you seize the momentum to start a third political party?
if third parties worked in the U.S., we wouldn't be in this situation, sir. One of the big problems with the way voting is done in the United States, I don't actually know how it's done in Canada, but we don't have the instant runoff thing, so you can't vote for the guy you really want, but if he doesn't make it, then this guy. Like, the way that voting is done in a lot of European nations actually makes it possible to have multiple parties, but the way it works down here, if you don't have a D or an R next to your name, you better have $1 million to dump into this that's your own money, or you're screwed.
You need more than a million.
Yeah, it's...
Well, no, I mean like for state level.
Yeah, no,
like, let alone.
It has actually been mathematically proven in the peer-reviewed literature. You can find the paper. I forget what the title is offhand. But there are actually papers proving that if you have first past the post voting, then the elections will converge on two political parties, inevitably. And those political parties will essentially represent only the center of the interests of the constituency that they represent, which in the case of the U.S., because we've ruled long ago that money is effectively speech, and we've progressively made that more the case, it is fundamentally impossible to have a political party that wins elections in the United States on any sort of remotely regular basis that does not represent those interests. And those interests in this case are the interests of the people who own, you know, 90%+ of the liquid wealth, and that is very nearly literally entirely the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, in Boston, we've actually been working with the Massachusetts Prior Party that's trying to start up, and we are big fans of them, and we hope that they do well. It's really hard for any third party to make it in the U.S., and I don't think that tying our horse to that wagon is a good idea.
It is possible in some respects, especially in local elections. It's generally more feasible. The mathematics apply only to a national scale where you have a huge number of voters and, you know, different sets of interests that have to be satisfied. It's somewhat less the case in local elections. It still tends to converge there, but it doesn't have to be the same parties. But fundamentally, you know, you can get situations where that's where you get independence. I mean, you can see that in the United States Senate with Bernie Sanders. He's an independent. He's not a member of either party, even though he does caucus with the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
He caucuses with the Democrats. He doesn't strictly do party line votes. He very commonly does, but which is funny for a socialist, because, you know. But anyway, in spite of his frequent towing of the Democratic Party line, he is not actually a Democrat. He does help push the Democratic Party somewhat towards more left-wing policies. So, I mean, it would help if on a local level we didn't have the same influence of the same two parties. But fundamentally, you still see the same sort of problem occurring as long as you have first past the post voting. Other systems of voting, such as independent runoff, border count, stuff like that.
Is the instant runoff one of the ones that works?
They all have problems. There is no system of voting that I've ever heard of, and I'm pretty familiar with voting systems, that prevents entirely the idea of strategic voting. Where maybe the candidate that you support the most you don't vote for, or an independent runoff or board account systems of voting like that that are preference voting, you don't vote for them as your top choice, you vote for them as second or lower, and you vote for some other candidate who is somewhat close to your goals as being the first one. And consequently, you do that so that the person who ends up being elected is closer to your position than the person who would have been elected if you'd voted strictly along your own personal preferences. That's why it's called strategic voting. It works in every electoral system that I know of. You can't really get around it, but you can kind of minimize the impact of it. In a first past the voting system, you end up with something that everyone hates. And if you look at it, if you look at polls in the United States, everyone hates the outcome of our voting system. You know, our president has less than 50% approval.
A lot of people don't even understand it.
Yeah, of course. And it doesn't make much sense. Frankly, there's no, aside from the fact that it is what's in place, there is no good reason to understand it. It is stupid and a waste of time. It was one of the first reasonably democratic electoral systems in the world.
It's archaic.
And, you know, like any other technology, and voting systems are technology, make no mistake. Essentially, any technology, we make improvements on. We make it, when people are actually working on it, we work making them at an incredible pace. Most of the voting systems that exist in the world were made within the, were created within the first 100 years of the idea of free democratic elections. I mean, that's how they were applied. And if you look at the history, most of the countries that have implemented some sort of democratic voting either used one of the, either directly occurred within that first century, or they used methods developed within that time frame. There simply was this huge burst of innovation, and it kind of leveled off because there was no one adopting new ideas. Mm-hmm. So fundamentally, you know, you have these ideas, and some of them come from the beginning of that time frame, like the United States voting system was very, very early. And then you have things like the independent runoff or the board count, which is used in a couple of regional elections. I don't think it's used in any national elections, but, you know, there are these different systems, and some of them derived from late in that period, and they're actually better representing the views of the population as a whole, whereas the United States one is terrible at representing the views of the population as a whole.
Yeah, for sure. Before this, we were talking about Facebook, and we were talking about, like, needing or wanting to be able to reach people that may not be in Anonymous or whatever. What are the things that Anonymous wants to get out there? Like, especially right now at this point.
Well, the thing about Anonymous is there are no long-term goals. Like, we're doing this shit because it amuses us. At the moment, the idea of global revolution actually really amuses us, so we're going to do this shit. But, you know, the minute that turns boring, we're going to go back to photoshopping pictures of celebrities. There are things that individual Anons would really like people to get involved in. I think there are a lot of Anons out there, and probably a lot of people in this room right now, who would really like it if everybody in the world just took a minute and went, you know what? We don't actually have to be afraid to speak our minds and to have our own opinions, because I think a lot of people have that fear, especially in the U.S. and probably some other places. But, I mean, we're living in a country right now where you can't get on an airplane without either getting x-rayed or groped, and that is bullshit.
If only it were only x-rayed.
And just everywhere
in
the...
provide a convenient excuse for me to not go down to see my family in the Southeast.
Well, yes, we're all happy that you don't have to go visit
Yay!
Your family.
Anyway.
but seriously, there is no reason for people to be as scared and as hopeless as they are, and I don't like that, and we need to stop that. And I think one of the things that Anonymous and Occupy Wall Street and all this other stuff is doing is giving people this tiny glimmer of hope that maybe things don't need to be shit forever. Maybe we can get things back to a point where it's okay again.
So what about as far as people that want to learn more about Anonymous or get involved or whatever, where do people like that go?
Whyweprotest.net is a website where a lot of Anons go to plan things. If people want to get involved in the Occupy movement, Occupy Together is a website where they have a lot of the different websites for the various occupations all around the world. I would really not recommend anyone who's just kind of interested in Anonymous go to 4chan as their first introduction, because
never.
You will run away crying.
You should. You should run away crying.
It's a horrible, horrible place.
But entertaining, nonetheless.
Sometimes. But if people want to get involved in the political stuff, definitely Why We Protest is a good place to start. And
I've also had people suggest Occupy Cafe.
I have not been to that one. What's that?
Apparently it's a bunch of people that aren't necessarily actively involved in the Occupy movement, but agree broadly with the goals and stuff. And they go in specifically just to have, like, idea discussions and policy discussions rather than dealing...
Is that a forum or an actual?
Yeah, it's a forum.
Okay.
I think it's occupycafe.org. It might be .com. I don't know. Google it. I'm sure it'll come up. Someone linked me to it.
Yeah.
But I've been there occasionally. Definitely seems to be a lot of policy discussions. The person that linked me to it has been very active in saying that, you know, we have a lot of, when they talk to people down at the Occupy, they have a lot of the right ideas about what the problems are, and what they need is, this is actually something this person in particular brought up, that they need some sort of, when they bring up solutions, they need some sort of material support for those solutions. And basically, the person that brought it up has advocated to me bringing in existing nonprofit think tanks who do work on, like, economic research and stuff to bring that information so that when people in the Occupy movement are trying to make decisions, like at the GAs, they have the material and research from experts.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're active at Occupy Cafe, and there are other people there with various sorts of ideas about what to do there. But basically, it's bringing together people who are interested in the topic and wanting to bring sort of academic discussions. So.
So, kind of sum up Anonymous.
Did people over this earlier? You can't sum up Anonymous.
It doesn't happen.
Anonymous means very different things to different people, and anything we say is going to make people want to come over to our house and punch us in the face, no matter which side of the fence we go on.
If we said anything specific about what Anonymous was about, we would very rightfully incite the wrath of a large number of people at Anonymous. Anonymous is not about any one thing ever.
It's definitely not about the political stuff at all.
Nope.
Like, I mean, a lot of Anons have been involved in Occupy Wall Street, but Occupy Wall Street is not an Anonymous action at all.
Yeah.
It's just something that some of us have decided is a good idea and we're going to help out with.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, there is no consensus in Anonymous at all on whether or not we should even be there.
And
that is even worse than what it was for Chinology, the Scientology stuff.
If we show up and say that Anonymous is supporting something, that's strictly true because there are a lot of Anons supporting it, but it doesn't mean that Anonymous as a whole is doing it. Anonymous as a whole does not do anything ever.
Anonymous does lots of things, like order pizzas for people.
All right. But no, realistically speaking, there is essentially nothing.
Order pizzas for people that don't know it's coming, you mean?
Yeah,
that's a traditional thing that Anons do if we get upset with somebody.
Or call the or contact the United States Post Office through their web interface and order them thousands and thousands of cardboard boxes that will get delivered for free.
Or a lot of hookers.
Did you this one guy was saying kind of the same thing. Somebody was trolling on a forum or whatever, and this one guy suggested phone every service repairman, plumber, everything, send them to the guy's house, call the press, tell them something big is happening at the same time.
No, the most fun you can possibly have with someone is filling up their entire front yard with hardwood. Nearly every company in the entire country who sells or makes hardwood, be it your local carpet store or, you know, one of the actual manufacturers, we'll send out small samples. The list that one of the Anons I know has is almost 12,000 different places you can contact that will all send samples. If you coordinate it properly, you can have someone delivered about, you know, a football stadium's worth of wood samples.
Enough wood to build their own house.
Over the span of about 2 days. After a few hours of deliveries, they will go apologize to everyone they might have made mad in the world, in hopes that they get the right one.
And it's too late. Cause
that's one of my favorites, personally.
Right on.
The black faxes are always good.
Oh, yeah.
The what?
Black faxes.
You get a fax number for a place that, you know, has done something wrong, and either you send them a flat black sheet or you send them a mostly black thing that says something vaguely related to whatever they shouldn't have done in the first place, and you just keep faxing it to them. And it keeps going, and not only does it tie up their fax line so they can't get anything actually productive done, but it also chews up all of their toner.
Yeah, one of the other things that people do is they take a long black, long flat sheet of paper that they printed entirely black, and then they tape the ends together so that one end of it is going through the scanning portion, and the other one is going through the through the feeder, so it just continually feeds through and sends them black data, so they use up all their black toner in no time.
It's like the anonymous Ouroboros.
Yeah, sort of.
All right,
now, mind you, we don't do anything illegal. Nope. We have never engaged in any of these activities personally. We're just sharing stories of things other people have done.
Yeah, of course not. All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
All right, have a good one, man.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Tell me what I need to carry on. I need some rawhide. Let's see the flesh side. I need a rawhide thong that tightens when it drops. I need some rawhide. I hope that you can tell me what I need to carry on. I need a pack mule. I need some camp. I need a pack you can carry a body, maybe two. I need a pack mule. I hope that you can tell me what I need to carry on.